When funding is limited, there are two ways to stop turning people away and continue expanding treatment. One is to reduce the cost of the drugs, and the other is to reduce the other costs of delivering them. The cheapest first-line drugs now cost about $100 a year. We need to keep working to reduce these costs, including the most effective regimes that contain tenofovir. But unfortunately, drug costs are not likely to go down much in the next few years. So that leaves the option of driving down the cost of delivery. We are seeing a lot of evidence that this is possible. In 2006, PEPFAR studied a number of its sites in Botswana and reported delivery costs of nearly $1,000 per patient per year. 2 years later, the cost was down to $245. In Nigeria, it dropped from 2,000 to 280, a reduction of nearly 90%. Now, some of these costs come from minimizing personnel costs. As sites see more patients, the staff can cover more people. Some tasks can be shifted from doctors to nurses or nurses to assistants. Some clinics also look at having the most simple testing regimes. They may run fewer CD4 counts or check less often for toxicity. To drive down the cost of delivering treatment, we need to understand smart ways of doing both, minimizing personnel costs and appropriate simplification of the testing regimes. But right now, we're not measuring best practices or sharing them like we should. For example, a question like whether there's a more expensive drug that actually saves money because it reduces delivery costs, we would need numbers to know if that was the best approach. If we could limit the delivery and administrative costs to no more than twice the cost of the drugs themselves, then the total cost of treatment could get down to $300 per patient per year. If we achieve that for the amount of money we spend today on treatment, we could treat twice as many people. ARV treatment and male circumcision are two powerful, proven tools for prevention, and we should scale them up as fast as we can. Another set of interventions, those designed to persuade people to change risky behavior, have had success in certain regions with focused populations. For example, our foundation supports efforts in India to encourage sex workers and their clients to use condoms, and the results have been impressive. Now, as we work to scale up methods of influencing behavior change in Africa, we need to clearly measure their impact so we know which ones are making a difference and should be scaled up. The payoff of scaling these tools could be huge. If we identify the most effective efforts and expand access to them, we can prevent millions of deaths. So that would be good news, but not good enough. Even if we did everything possible with the tools we have today, the most optimistic prediction suggests that we would only cut new infections by half. Millions of people would continue to transmit the virus, and we would not have enough money to treat everyone who needs it. Fortunately, we don't have to assume that in the future we'll be limited to fighting HIV with the tools we have today. We can do better. Innovations coming through advanced science and diagnostics and computer modeling and our understanding of the virus itself will make it possible to create new weapons for the fight against AIDS, prevent more infections, and save more lives. Let me talk about some of this work that I'm especially excited about. One very promising area is ARV-based prevention, either through pills, gels, or injections with the drugs we now use for treatment. 4 years ago, when my wife Melinda and I spoke at this conference in Toronto, we called ARV-based microbicides the next big advance in the fight against HIV. The early trial results of gels that did not contain ARV ingredients did not succeed. But we are very optimistic about the long-term potential of microbicides that contain